episode of the Friends Talking Fantasy Podcast. My name is Charles, and with me today, as always, is my lifelong friend and co-host, Dylan.
I'm ready to talk some fantasy with my friends, Charles.
Yes, plural. We are ready to talk fantasy with our friends because today we have friend of the show, Adrian Gibson, on, normally as the host of the SFF podcast, but he's wearing another hat today, dare I say a mushroom cap, to talk about the upcoming release of his debut novel, Mushroom Blues. Adrian, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you guys too. That was a great introduction, Charles. You've been you've been working hard, man.
I appreciate that. You know, you guys are the best, and it's always exciting to have a member of the SFF Addicts podcast on the show, and it brings a little more. I try a little harder. What can I say?
Yeah, the bad boy of SFF is here to spice.
Oh yes,
yes, that's right. The bad boy is here, and this is where he earned his title as well. So
no, here done his show.
No, oh, you're not... YouTube bestowed it upon me.
Let's say that we both did it, and I didn't.
We both did it. Come on, I made it a thing.
There is video evidence, and Charles, like, this always happens in front of Adrian. You're embarrassing me in front of Adrian, where we get into these little squabbles, and then I'm like, I'll send it to you later. And I did whatever the argument was last time. I did send it to you later.
I'm gonna send this one to you later. Don't remember. I have no recollection or evidence. But
now, no fighting, boys.
Because we're here today to celebrate a triumph. Here we have a new novel coming out. I guess at the time of this episode's release, it will be coming out
tomorrow.
Yeah. Because March 19th, 2024, we are entering the Fungalverse with Mushroom Blues. So Adrian, like, first novel, like, why don't you pick us off, tell us a little bit about it. I've teased the whole mushroom angle of it, the fungal verse. I'm sure plenty of fans are piqued. Why don't you give us a little preview into the book?
Yes, I can tell you, I can tell everyone a little synopsis just to give them a sense of what the book is about. And then we can dive deep into it and get real mycological up
Let's
in here.
Do it.
But Mushroom Blues is the first book in the Hoffman Report series. It's also the first book in the Fungalverse shared fictional universe. And it follows a police detective, a homicide detective named Henrietta Hoffman, as she is investigating the murder and disappearances of fungal and half-breed children in the city of Neokonoko. And so it's a murder mystery, a police procedural. And as she goes on this investigation, she has to team up with a mushroom-headed beat cop named Koji Nameko. And so the two go across the city investigating these murders and disappearances and how the different socio-political elements within this city are involved in some capacity and kind of exploring the complexities of what's going on as they figure out who killed these kids or who kidnapped them and why. Yeah, and I'm just very, very excited because it's a secondary world that I created, and it's just brimming with mushrooms, mold, and mycelium. And yeah, we'll talk a lot. You're probably going to be like annoyed by the end of this. Like, stop talking about mushrooms, man. But it's in the title.
Office. Shut up about the sun.
Stop talking about those shrooms.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dylan.
Yeah, we've been lucky enough to get a sneak peek of it before it's come out. We've been able to read the first 25% of the book and really enjoyed reading about a totally unique concept and not just brimming with all that fungal, I don't know all the words you just used, but it, also just brimming with life. And it's such a really unique and cool world that you created. And I also want to say, because you've got an awesome, I forget what they call these, but like an elevator pitch of what the book's like. You call it Blade Runner, True Detective, and District 9 meld with the weird worlds of Jeff Vandermeer and China Mieville in Adrian M. Gibson's Fungal Punk Noir debut. I mean, if you're not sold hearing that, I mean, I don't know what else we can do for you, listener.
Just turn off the episode now.
No, you are, for sure. I mean, that
it's all downhill from here. Guaranteed.
I mean, because this whole world is kind of both the setting and then half of the people in this world are influenced by this, you know, are these, what is the name of these people? I'm keep wanting to say fungal.
Just fungals. Yeah. Fungals, or mushroom, right, people. Yeah.
So, I mean, we have to ask at the beginning, like, where did the inspiration come to take like noir style storytelling and put it in a world full of mushroom people?
Yeah. I mean, in other words, what's the deal with you and mushrooms?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll get into that. Yeah.
Yes.
If people know me, like, yeah, my close friends, like, I've just been immersed in mushrooms for a really long time. And it's been something that has been a part of my life since I grew up, since my childhood, where I would just find mushrooms in my backyard. I would go out into the forest all the time and basically like role play with friends, where we'd be smacking each other with sticks and stuff and pretending that we're like knights and whatever, and or having like pine cone fights, because that was a thing. Until somebody gets hit in the eye, and then you probably keep going anyways. But the coolest thing was just being immersed in that environment and stumbling across really weird shit. So it's like you'd just be like running around in the forest and you'd be digging through dirt and turn over like a big log, and underneath would just be webs of mycelium or like fungi that are growing on this decomposing log. And so that always just fascinated me. Like, there are these things that are growing out of other stuff that is essentially in a state of dying and decaying. And so that kind of sparked my fascination with mushrooms, but I never knew the complexities of what's going on beneath the soil until much later. And so when I was a teenager and then going into my 20s and starting to dabble much more in psychedelics, so like mushrooms and acid and DMT and stuff like that, where I started to realize the breadth of what mushrooms are capable of. And that kind of sparked an ongoing interest that, fueled by the internet, I was able to do a ton of deep dive research into what's going on here. Like, what are these things? Coming across mycologists and, you know, people who are even on like the amateur side of things. Paul Stamets is a really big influence. He's basically like a self-taught mycologist who has taken just so much of his life experience and infused it into mushrooms as a career, and how he can teach the public about mushrooms, how he can write about it in such a way that invigorates the imagination, but also kind of invigorates the human spirit to apply these practices in the real world. And so I had this desire to kind of take mushrooms and do something with it. It started out more in my artwork, where I was tattooing mushrooms and tattooing mushroom people. And I was heavily inspired by Jeff Vandermeer, which is why it's like I had to include him as a comparison. He has a trilogy called the Ambergris Trilogy, which is City of Saints and Mad Men, Shriek, and Finch. Finch in particular, which is the third and final book, is a detective noir set in a world where these humans colonized a city, or they colonized a place and built a city there. But in order to do that, they pushed a race of fungal people deep underground. And so this kind of like, this was my first, other than Mario and the toad people, which is bullshit because they suck and they don't really do anything. This was my first introduction of mushroom people and the ideas of how fungi could be incorporated into a secondary world, a fantasy world. In the case of Finch, it's like the mushroom people are much more of a hive mind and they're not really too individual in that sense. And so a lot of what I've done with the Fungalverse is having a conversation with Jeff Vandermeer's work, where, what is it, Dylan?
It's a tonal retort.
Ooh. Right. I guess you could argue that it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's kind of like I wanted to see what it would be like to give the fungal people more personal and individual agency while also maintaining a lot of these elements of fungi. And in conversation and retort with Jeff Vandermeer,
yes,
where the fungal people in his book are much more like of this hive mind, a bit more like brainless in a way, but very, very menacing. And so I wanted to humanize fungi. I wanted to humanize fungal people and contrast that with the dark sides of humanity. And so that was a big influence for me. And I started tattooing fungal people. I started drawing them and kind of allowing that to flourish through my artistic career. And around 5.5-6 years ago, I had a dream where I saw a giant bioluminescent mushroom just like in the trees, but like hovering over everything. It was gigantic and there were spores floating in the air. And I took this and I thought, like, I need to write a book in a world of mushroom people. And then the influences from Jeff Vandermeer came back and the art influences came into it a lot. But I spent way too much time world building and drawing and not enough time actually writing an interesting story. And so I had to kind of compartmentalize like what works about all this and how can I take that and pull in genres, much like Vandermeer did with his series, pull in genres that I adore and infuse them into this world that is based in fungi. And so that's where like the detective and police procedural elements came in, cyberpunk and influences from that, which will play more heavily into different series set in the Fungalverse, where it'll be more about technology and corporations and these very cyberpunk elements. But I pulled in these influences from genres that I love, from authors that I love, and people like Paul Stamets, who are proposing ideas for how fungi can be used to better humanity. And so applying that to things like mycological architecture and forms of communication and the ways in which fungi can be incorporated into engineering and all different kinds of applications. And I wrote one book in this world before Mushroom Blues, but it wasn't working too well. I finished it, but I decided that I needed to put it aside and write something else. And so Mushroom Blues started as a novella that I was going to give away for free when people signed up for a newsletter. But I just realized the world is too, this time period is too good. The characters were too rich and they needed to be fleshed out a lot more. And so one book essentially became a 4-book series. and yeah, that's kind of like the birth of the Fungalverse and how all that came to be.
Yeah. And I mean, something that I think you captured really well here, it stuck with me that you said, okay, I got to figure out how to keep some of these more hive mind type elements that are interesting about the fungals here, or the fungals that were in, was it Finch you said it was called? Yep. The Vandermeer book. You want to keep that, but you also then want to humanize the characters. So it's, you found a really cool balance here with the character of Koji. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, that's where the True Detective reference comes in for me, the True Detective comparison, because it kind of evoked that for me independently when I was reading. There's this like the fungal people have basically been colonized, and then you've got Koji, who's the only fungal on the force, and he gets paired up with Hoffman, and they kind of have some of these exchanges that have the feel of almost like the True Detective season one, where it's like Koji kind of taking the place of the Rust McConaughey character, and then Hoffman a little bit more in the Woody Harrelson shoes, where it's like, okay, Koji slash Matthew McConaughey. And of course, when this gets made into a huge feature film, we will be putting a mushroom putting on the, head
yeah,
on,
sure.
yeah, on Matthew McConaughey. Yes.
he can adapt to any role. He's good.
Oh, of course. I mean, look at the cut. You have this beautiful cover. It's got this wonderful shade of blue, and you've got this Koji figure smoking a cigarette. Mm-hmm. It's pretty epic, and I can just see McConaughey in that role. But you have this element where then Koji is representing the kind of fungal voice to Hoffman, and kind of like, I'm gonna change your worldview here. And we haven't it seems to be heading down that road. I mean, we haven't gotten as deep into it, but it really brought those kind of feelings like, challenge your worldview, I'm gonna bend your mind a little bit. And it's a really fun dynamic to have, and a superhuman dynamic to have, while in the background you have all these awesome supernatural elements happening that we won't get into too much for spoiler reasons, but make it really exciting and will be really cool for the fantasy fans to get into.
No, I'm so glad you picked up on that, though. It's like season one of True Detective was a huge, huge kind of like lodestone for me, for this, the mood and the atmosphere of the world, but also that relationship between Koji and Henrietta. Because yeah, like what McConaughey and Harrelson kind of have is this like uneasy relationship, and it's rooted in so much difference. And the entire season is basically about someone who is so set in their ways and someone who's so different that they constantly challenge that person's sort of like preconceived notions of life and institutions and their job and all these different things. And so like Koji, very much for Henrietta, is like, she comes from a country that has essentially programmed its citizenry in terms of justifying this war, this invasion that they carried out against a country that is so different from their own, you know, like humans versus fungals. And at the same time, those justifications kind of permeating into the culture, very much in the ways in which the United States government sort of permeated everything in like the early years of the 2000s after 9/11, with the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war and this kind of thing, and sort of like imbuing this like war culture mentality into its citizens. And that was very much something that I tried to bring into this world, where it's like humans are discriminatory towards the fungals, they're racist towards the fungals, because of the ways in which their cultural programming has set the frameworks for how they interact with these people, how they perceive them. And so Koji is just like that person who is prodding Henrietta again and again and again in terms of like morality and social values and cultural values and all these different kinds of things. And it was really important for me to kind of use him as a way to set Henrietta up for essentially what is like a climax of awakening and acceptance of the things that she thought were the truth and the traumas that she kind of carries along from her past, and how this investigation essentially, like, and Koji and the different fungals that she meets along the way break her down to the point where she can dissolve her sense of self and rebuild something more honest for her from the ashes of that.
Right. And usually when that happens for mushrooms, they're not actually talking to you. usually the spiritual awakenings in our world that occur for mushrooms are less right. conversational with the mushroom itself, but yeah, that's
no, they're like from all my psychedelic experiences, there are so many, like, you know, I call them my little spirits, basically. Like they're the little spirits that are allowing allowing me to essentially engage in a conversation with my own consciousness, my own subconscious. And so they're kind of like guides more than anything. Not to get like too esoteric or anything like that, but
no, I mean, it's again, you were kind of talking about the different themes and the idea of giving like a race of mushroom people their own identity and outside of this hive mind mentality in order to convey that. And I think what's really interesting when you incorporate like the symbolism of mushrooms into that is like on the surface level, they can be, if you aren't used to it or ignorant of it, it can be kind of repulsive. And so I definitely think there's some of that early on of like, oh, these people have like mushroom caps on their heads. They're like, don't touch me. You know, like that kind of thing, which is a much more physical metaphor of racism against a group of people.
I mean, your face looks like Matthew McConaughey, which is great, but the rest of you.
Right. But then like beneath that, there's also just there's so much like mystery and complicated biology and science that go on behind mushrooms that when you bring it into a personified culture, it's like, hey, there's a lot more, dare I say, beneath the surface of all of this that like maybe someone more ignorant of their culture wouldn't understand. And so being able to rope that into like a whole universe and world where you have two groups of people who their personalities can often be kind of very similar and they're both very human, but one is just a fungal person and the other one is what we're more considered a human being. And so that is where all the kind of conflict comes from. And it's kind of interesting to see, it's like, okay, it's culture, but also they're like two different organisms, yet they're interacting and living on top of each other. So that to me was like a really interesting way in which you've kind of went your own path with using this kind of mushroom fungal verse kind of metaphor into your bigger themes on humanity and culture, which I've always really been interested in myself. So I thought that particularly for me, for my reading experience, was a big highlight.
Nice. Thank you, man. Yeah. Cause it's really important for me. I think there's so much in just general life experience that is rooted in misunderstanding. And to have not only like cultural misunderstanding, but also biological misunderstanding. And Henrietta herself is mycophobic, in which case she's, you know, fearful in a lot of cases and disgusted by fungi, which is ironic for her and very unfortunate that she was, you know, this is in the first chapter, so it's not a spoiler, but she was essentially given an ultimatum and you know, the choice was imprisonment or exile, and her exile happened to be a place that is like her embodiment of hell. You know, it's like people you don't understand, a language you don't fully grasp, and fungi everywhere. And so she's the kind of person who's disgusted by the sight of like mushrooms on a plate and the idea of eating them, let alone living in an entire city filled with mushroom people and mushroom architecture and all this different kind of stuff. But it's just a really good foundation to be able to talk about complicated things like colonialism and race relations and all this different kind of stuff. And also approach it from this basis of familiarity with things like police procedural and mystery and genres that people are much more familiar with. But then on top of that, just ramp up the infusion. Shout out to my friend Jonathan Navarre, because he put it perfectly as like microdose world building, where it's like the infusion of the weird and the intangible and the surreal is like trickling in at the beginning. And then it ramps up more and more and more as the book goes on, until it like it's really surreal towards the end and the things that she's experiencing.
I'm excited to get to that part for sure. And I'm thinking about how you said that this is essentially Hoffman's personal hell that she's stuck in. Cause I think it was Sanderson during one of his writing seminars, he talks about, hey, if you're in a situation where you have a premise or world or a situation already set, but you don't have the character yet, One way that you can do it is just think, who is the absolute worst person that this could ever happen to? Like, and put them right in there. And okay, now you've got your main character. So I don't know if that was an actual process that played out deliberately for you, but you certainly adhered well to one of Sanderson's thoughts about how to fit character and story together.
Yeah, I don't remember that particular anecdote from Sanderson. Was it in his like his online classes?
Yeah, I think it was in one of the
One of
lectures
his
at
film lectures,
BYU.
yeah.
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 Because I watched all those years ago and they're really, really helpful and motivational for me. But I don't remember that particular tidbit, but probably it just kind of like floated in my subconscious. And as I fleshed Henrietta out as a character, I just thought of different aspects to her that would make this situation more and more unpalatable. Which I think helps because she is not the most likable character. She is pretty despicable in some ways. But, for you two, like fans of Abercrombie's work, there is something really special in being able to humanize terrible people and make them, not relatable in every aspect of their being, but relatable in a few key aspects that you can kind of empathize with them, even though you're kind of like grossed out by the fact that you're empathizing with, like Glockta is a horrible, horrible person, a torturer,
Torture.
and yet he is, for me, easily the best character in that entire series, just because of the way Abercrombie was able to utilize the empathetic aspects of his character to engage you, but then using the despicable aspects of his character to make you question your own judgments and to draw you in deeper through this sort of like self-analytical process of like, why am I connecting to this person? Like, they're
Why do I
doing,
do this?
why do I do this to
Especially
myself? It's kind of
yeah.
this like weird psychological trick that is going on where when somebody sees a car accident, they're more often than not likely to slow down and watch and see what's happened. Like, we're drawn to horror, we're drawn to bleak stuff, and I think that's why like most news focuses so much on the disasters and the terrible things that are happening, as opposed to like all the positive. Of course, there's positive stuff in this book, and that's kind of part of the big payoff. But I do think there is something about human psychology where you can find this just strange sort of connection with people who are doing things that you disagree with.
For sure, but I think also the other level, yes, like there's a lot about the main character of the story, Hoffman, that's kind of detestable, but and you could say like racist, because technically it is in this world, it is for sure. But what's interesting is it's rooted in this procedural, police noir crime kind of investigation. The story opens where she's investigating a crime of like the murder of an innocent like being, right? And so you're rooting for her from the beginning, obviously. It's like this person's good in that they're trying to figure out who committed this crime and try to bring justice to this case. And then thing you we kind of get introduced more and more to the shocking elements of not just her character, but the kind of systematic oppression of one race over another in the story. It is opened up as well, but it's the kind of procedural drama opening that we can kind of grab onto and go into the more psychedelic ride later on, because to me I love the scenes where it's like, you're a loose cannon, Hoffman. There's no you've got to be careful out there in the field, like those classic police moments where it's like, what's gonna happen next? You never know with these grizzly grizzled detective types, but
And
it's
those are the
part of
things.
the endearment of the character and how you can kind of branch off of that from there and make it your own is the fascinating part.
And those are the things that I love, because it's like, people can hate or love tropes, you know, that's a personal thing, but there are certain genres where the tropes are just so quintessential and evocative of that genre. And I think mystery and police procedurals and sort of like crime thrillers and these sorts of things, those tropes really help to ground the reader in that genre. And I love, like, you know, when it comes to police procedurals, the sort of relationship between like the detective and the captain, or like the person who's in charge, the sorts of relationships within like the bullpen and that kind of stuff.
I'll have your badge.
Yeah, I'll have your badge.
Yeah, exactly.
Leave it on my desk and get the fuck out of here. And like, you know, the forensics team and going and doing like an autopsy and this kind of stuff is so fun for me because I love those elements and I love those sort of tropey moments in this particular genre. And then on top of that, it's like I can twist those around and make something disgusting like an autopsy even more disgusting with like mycelium and fungal elements, or, you know, like make the interrogations more evocative because of what the world and the people who inhabit it have kind of established as possible. Not necessarily like we're rooted in the real world and so an interrogation's an interrogation, but no, we're in the secondary world with fungal people, and so how could that that kind of interrogation play out, you know what I mean?
It's and that's the other thing too that Sanderson always writes, is like, hey, it's got to be entertaining at the end of the day as well, and who doesn't love a procedural drama? But then you spice it with like all these influences of just like your understanding and appreciation of mushrooms and working that into a work of fiction, you know, it's the combination is where the magic happens. So for sure,
yeah.
I'm a huge procedural police drama fan myself. So I'm down for all of those tropes as well. You know,
yeah. And if anyone, actually a friend of mine recommended, I include this cause I have a glossary with like, you know, language that I like sort of like phrases and as part of a language for the fungal people, also sort of like slang words and slurs that they use towards each other, the humans and the fungals, a whole like sort of list of like deities that are part of the fungal people's religion. But a friend of mine recommended that I include sort of like fungal terminology into the glossary itself. So it's like, you know, I think if people are kind of wary of the phrases and words that exist, like even mycelium, like for a lot of people, that particular word might not have clear significance. So I have included that stuff in the glossary. So it's like you can learn a little bit more about, you know, mycological biology and terminology and that kind of stuff, while also being able to immerse yourself in like the police procedural elements and all that kind of stuff that you're probably more familiar with.
Yeah, I definitely learned a lot of new words. Mycelium and all. I was like, okay, I think that has to do with fungi. Like, I am learning a lot from that terminology.
That
so I appreciate
mushroom,
you including
from context. I'm
yeah.
guessing.
Yes. And I do kind of toss people into it. Like, this is the kind of world and story where it's like you're thrown into it, and there's a lot of like implied history and stuff that happens before. But yeah, just like get into it real quick. You're going to learn about like spores and filaments and all kinds of nasty shit.
One of the things that I wanted to kind of ask you about beyond the fungal verse itself is the actual kind of step into releasing like a self-published book. What was your experience like? Like, we know you know, a big background in art, and you mentioned tattooing, and then you mentioned your inspiration in literature, your big dream. But how do you go from that to actually the discipline of sitting down and writing a book? I know you mentioned you had other books that you had in the works, but what was it like writing Mushroom Blues and entering into like self-publishing this book?
It's been very challenging and just a lot of unexpected stuff. I think the podcast, like SFF Addict, set me up for expectations of the writing process more so than self-publishing. The writing process itself was still quite difficult, but I'd learned so much from different authors in terms of like how to approach a first draft and how to approach editing and stuff like that, that I knew, like, even though I'm getting stuck on like a particular scene or a particular chapter, like there are things that I can do to just kind of like push forward and get towards the end such that I have a clear idea of the end and I don't have to stress myself out as much along the way. And revision and editing was actually really fun because it just helped me and gave me the opportunity to really hone in on a lot of the stuff that I knew needed to be elaborated upon. So there are certain things that it's like, I didn't write it in the beginning of the first draft, but it kind of came about spontaneously throughout the rest of the book that I knew, like, okay, I have to go back into the beginning chapters and kind of like rework this element in to give it more punch and more potency, like the sort of empathic hive mind nature of the fungal people was something that I came up with during the drafting process, not before, not during outlining, none of that. Like I went back and started to rework that because I knew it was a really cool angle and something that added a lot to the world and to the story. But self-publishing is just, that is the thing that for me has been, I think, more challenging, because regardless of how much people tell you, I've had the benefit of talking to a ton of different authors and getting their experiences with it. Ryan Cahill and Rob J. Hayes like did one-on-one calls with me. We just like chatted on Zoom and they walked me through a ton of stuff. Crystal Matar has been really beneficial, just like as a friend, but also the kind of person I could go to with questions whenever I had them. But I think regardless of how much stuff you learn, regardless of how much preparation you've done, nothing really prepares you for actually just doing the thing. And a lot of it is like trial by fire. And you kind of have to push through and learn those lessons. And a lot of the people that I've talked to, you know, Ryan, Rob, whoever, they say that the first book is the most difficult because you don't necessarily have an idea of what to expect until it happens. Every subsequent book after that, you have a more clear idea of what you can expect. And eventually, like in Rob's case, he's published like over a dozen novels. It, for him, releasing a book is much less stressful because he has such a clear idea of what to expect. And a lot of it is just learning these different skill sets. And in my case, it's like, you know, just because I have a background in certain areas, like in graphic design and art, most authors, they would get their cover artist and get their cover art, but they would also have a cover designer or like an interior designer. I'm doing all that myself and learning how to design a book from back to front. I did the typography for the cover on top of Felix Ortiz's amazing artwork.
Yeah.
I'm recording the audiobook myself. And having a good friend of mine helping out with like the mastering and cleaning that up and making it sound as professional as possible. So it's like, I think I'm doing more than the average author to begin with. On top of like,
you are.
Well, yeah, on top of like not doing so.
Yeah, yeah. On yeah. top of like, you know, I'm still doing my podcast and raising two boys and, you know, doing like a book tour. Like this podcast is part of like my virtual book tour. And I've talked to a lot of other authors. I had no idea what a book tour really entailed until I set one up and realized that I went way bigger than most authors ever do.
I've seen that document, like that snapshot of all your different stuff. I'm like, he's doing something every day, basically from like late January until this book releases. Like you are one of the hardest working men in the publishing industry right now, Adrian. I'm like, when does this guy sleep?
I mean, my kids don't let me sleep enough, but you know, it's just it's one of those things where I needed to challenge myself. If I didn't, you know, set out to do this, if I didn't set out to release it at a certain point, if I didn't set up the book tour and do all these different things, it would have taken me a lot longer to muster up the courage to actually do this kind of thing. It's like through my own personal experience, I do much better in terms of like curbing procrastination and curbing these habits that I know I have. If I have a deadline, if I have like a concrete endpoint that says like, you know, like this SF Fanatics episode has to be out by this point.
Yeah.
That is the kind of thing where I'm like, well, shit, like I'm going to do it, you know? And I'll figure out a way. So a lot of it is just kind of manipulating my own psychology as I've come to understand how I work. And all of the things that I've done have basically been me just like telling my habits to fuck off and setting these goals for myself so that I would push forward even when I might not have had the motivation or energy to do so.
Yeah. I mean, holding yourself accountable
like
that is so huge. And I mean, you've got so many appearances that have probably already came out in various podcasts, so many blog posts, all that kind of stuff. So, check all of those out. I'm sure you'll be keeping everyone abreast on your social media and all of that, Adrian. So
it's not something every day. It's like a couple things a week. Yeah. depending on which week. The closer we get, like by this point, it'll be like there's like the ramp up from like the end of February towards launch is like there's much more frequency. But for the most part, it's like all the stuff that I've got a lot of this stuff like already prepared, and it's been really fun to do like blog posts and map reveal and cover reveal and the different interviews and all that kind of stuff. Just as a way to chat with friends, because a lot of the people whose podcasts I'm on are friends, and then you two included. It's like it feels really cool to be able to like come from, we know each other through other circumstances, but now I get to talk with you guys about something that is like another part of me and very just very special to me, but in a different way than the podcast.
Taking off the podcasting hat and putting on the author cap.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, at my wedding, my brothers gave me a visor with two portobello mushrooms screwed to the brim. Yeah.
Nice. They know me well. Didn't bring that into all of your video interviews during your book
tour. No, that thing got destroyed so fast.
I wanted to borrow it for Charles's wedding.
Yeah, by the end of it, the portobellos were like falling apart. So
that's a bummer. I'll have to make my own. Yeah. Well, it must be interesting though, Adrian, because folks probably already know that you have interviewed so many incredible authors over on SFF Addicts podcast. I mean, that's like the just master I was going to call it a master class of interviewing. You also have master class series, so I don't want to confuse anyone. But that
Either
is
way.
just an amazing collection of interviews that you have over there, and it must be kind of weird, right? Like being on the other side here, and now you're the author getting interviewed. How has that been for you?
It was really nerve-wracking at the beginning, dude. Like the first interview that I recorded, which won't be the first interview. Like it'll be out by the time this one goes out. But it's on our pod on with Hannah and Laura from On Wednesdays We Read, and it's great because like I know them, and so it's kind of like we have this familiarity. But at the same time, that being my first interview as an author, it my nerves kind of welled up in such a way where I was talking about things that I had in my head for so long, and I never really got the chance to like talk to other people about them or nerd out about this stuff.
Right.
And so once we like started talking about, you know, like my psychedelic experiences and these things that are really personal to me, and you know, I actually started to get like pretty emotional, and people could probably hear it in my voice. It's not like I was like breaking down and crying or anything like that, but it did feel like really powerful and kind of like overwhelming for me. And so it is strange because I've talked to MJ about this, where she felt really nervous to start interviewing people coming from the author side of things, where she was the one that had always been interviewed. And so I think it's just a matter of like what you're familiar with. And for me, like interviewing somebody is second nature. Like I don't really even think about it. I don't have to do any preparation for it. And I don't necessarily have to like psych myself up to talk to someone like Jim Butcher or Martha Wells or whomever. But you know, getting interviewed about my own stuff and talking about myself, it's like shit, I haven't talked about myself this much in a really long time.
It's so much more personal being on the interviewee
I
side,
know,
because
dude.
the interviewer side, I mean, you do way more than we do, but we've got some experience here, and I found a lot of like, okay, if you're gonna talk about yourself, it's gotta be just a like quick reference to something, and you're like, and that's why like this thing about you matters, interviewee. Like
You're kind of like
it's
using
a
your own experience as a way to like set up and segue to talk to them and be like, you know, this is my take on this, but what do you feel about it? And kind of like
Exactly, just to tee them up.
you're always trying to set them up for the slam dunk and whatnot.
But now you have to, you have to be the one who finishes the alley-oop here, and you've done an
I mean,
awesome job, Adrian.
it's
It's
kind of you put
thanks,
yourself
guys.
out there a little bit, you know, writing a book and putting it out there. There's some vulnerability to that as well. And it doesn't sound easy as someone who's like interviewed a lot of people and done the show and listened to whatever, just to then the idea of actually writing a book, like, oh my God, what are you crazy? Like that's a whole nother that is a whole nother world of work and artistry and vulnerability that is just like wow. And then to promote it afterwards, mad respect. I don't know how you're doing all of that, and you're doing video content over on SFF podcast. I don't know how you do that too on top of everything else.
It's like routine is pretty much what it comes down to at this point. Like I told you before we started recording, like I have my one day a week where I edit an episode, and that just like everything is streamlined, where I have like my templates in for editing audio. I have like my template for editing video, and a lot of it is just like drag and drop and you know, have my little systems for taking care of things. And writing a book is very similar in a lot of ways, even though it's just every day. And I think it's a lot more consuming, where the mind is just like roiling with ideas and things to implement and whatnot, or things to edit. And it's just kind of like a constant presence for a very long time. It's pretty wild. but it's cool to talk to other authors and realize like everyone who writes a book is kind of a little messed up in the sense like that they would willingly undergo this process and do this thing and carry it to its end, carry it towards fruition.
Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, it takes a lot to get it to the end. And I mean, yeah. That's something that's, I think, such a huge accomplishment. There's many folks out there who have started books, and there is a much smaller percentage of folks who have finished books. And Adrian, you have a couple other books that are on the way as well. Like I noticed on your website, there's Spore City is going to be coming in the fall. And that's really exciting. I'm curious, is there anything that you're able to tell us at this time about Spore City?
I'm not going to get into too much detail about it, but it is the book that I wrote before Mushroom Blues. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like reworking it and using that as the jumping off point for a different series in the Fungalverse. So Mushroom Blues kicks off the Hoffman Report, which is a 4-book series, as I mentioned earlier. And then Spore City is going to be the beginning of the Kanoko trilogy, which is set 3 decades in the future. And that one is much more like cyberpunk with fungal technology and shady corporations and corrupt government, but also like mushroom gangster crime families, like pulling a lot of inspiration from the Greenbone Saga.
Oh, yeah.
And Koji making a return as an older man and investigating his own investigation. So it's kind of like a lot of this stuff really, really ties into each other. And I'm going to be going back and forth between the Hoffman Report and the Kanoko trilogy, as well as incorporating more stuff into the Fungalverse. I have, I think, like 10 books and 2 short story collections, more or less like planned for the Fungalverse over the next like decade or however long. So,
yeah, take that, Sanderson's Cosmere.
Yeah, take that. Real.
I'm going to colonize.
The yeah.
These mushrooms are going to be grown over the orbs of those series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Adrian, the amount of work that you've done already and the ambition that you have for the project going forward, it is very impressive, very inspiring. One of the things I want to make sure that we talk about as we kind of wrap up the discussion is, like, as someone who's doing all of this work, kind of taking the lead on a lot of this effort to self-publish this book, what are some of the best ways that people who are interested in Mushroom Blues and interested in you can do to support you?
I mean, yeah, you can support SFF Addicts. Just listen to the show, watch it, or support us on Patreon. And then for Mushroom Blues in particular, just, yeah, like pick up a copy of the book. I hope you enjoy it. If you are into mushrooms, or if you're not into mushrooms, I think this book has a lot for a lot of different people. You might come out of it loving mushrooms more, but also at the same time being more disgusted by them. My hope is that just by reading this book, people are more curious to learn more about fungi and this kingdom of organisms that exist on our planet and have shaped our planet in a lot of ways, but a lot of people just don't know much about them. And so, like, hopefully my book is a jumping off point for them to do their own research and just kind of go down their own rabbit holes, whether it's like psychedelics or whether it's mycology or what have you. Book will be out tomorrow, March 19th, in paperback and ebook, and it'll be out on April 2nd in hardcover and then April 16th in audiobook. So you got lots to look forward to, and hopefully later this year with Spore City. You can also sign up for my newsletter if you want to keep up to date on things, adrianmgibson.com, or you can follow me on social media at Adrian M. Gibson. On pretty much like all the platforms is that to be more frequently updated about all my happenings. But yeah, hope people check it out, and I hope they enjoy it.
Absolutely. There you go, guys. Enter the Fungalverse tomorrow, March 19th. Mushroom Blues, Adrian M. Gibson. You don't want to miss it, guys. Come on. And then don't forget SFF podcast as well. Lots of awesome content going on over there. So much great stuff to enjoy. And it sounds like we'll have a lot to enjoy for a long time to come as the Fungalverse just kind of spreads like a mold fungus over everything.
Hell yeah. That's the hope, man. That's the hope. And yeah, we got our 100 episode anniversary. Or not anniversary, but just like 100 episode celebration.
Congrats to SFF Addicts.
Yeah, so that'll be in April. So MJ and I are very excited to to celebrate 100 episodes. Feels pretty crazy. But
cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a really cool accomplishment. Well, guys, I mean, I think we've said it all, right? I mean, this book, if you're not, you know, how are you not interested? How are you not pre-ordering this book right now? Can you pre-order it? I don't even...
No, I haven't done pre-orders because that's another thing, like with the self-pub. It's like learning how to properly do pre-orders and or like how to at least take advantage of it. I just talked to some friends and I was like, yeah, fuck it. I'm not going to
just come back with this tomorrow. Guys.
Yeah. Like, just pick it up tomorrow.
Book. You don't need us to explain that to you. Just remember Mushroom Blues. Not gonna want to miss it. So check it out.
Yeah. But yeah. Thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate you as friends and just as podcasters and voices in the community. So,
Thank you, Adrian. Yeah, the feeling is mutual. thank you thank for you coming. For
us. Thank you for sharing your work with us, allowing us to preview it, allow us to be part of your book tour. Yes. We're very happy to get a sneak peek into Mushroom Blues, and we can't wait to dive into the rest of it tomorrow.
Hell yeah. Thank you guys so much.
All right, guys. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to check out all of Adrian's exciting projects he's got going on. Just Google them and click on all the things. You won't regret it. Thank you all for listening. And as always, go
you will
forward.
Very much regret it.
And conquer, friends. You won't regret it, I promise. Bye.